Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Brain Games has its National Geographic space back and taking episodes on the road starting tonight. Executive producer James Rowley joins me next. Studio C, the Ready for BYU TV primetime sketch variety program, is heading into its 15th season. Get a preview from executive producer and showrunner Jake Van Wagener later this hour. And from there, leap into Drama World, the unusual mix of rom-com and adventure running on IMDb TV. Our guides, executive producers Chris Martin and Sean DeLay, they come your way during our final 30 minutes. Also ahead, interactivity rides again at Netflix. A&E drops our Up segment. We'll explain what we're talking about there. Our classic trivia question and a takeaway of the week. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and present on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, the iRadio Podcast Network, Verbal, and Reason. This just in, tomorrow will be televised, brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and whenever you want. Get a free book or two when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in today's program. Welcome to all of you tuning into the program about TV's current and future. 34 degrees at the top of the hour. We have a jam-packed show for you today. We're going to get right to it, and we want you to be along for the ride. How do you do that? You pick up the phone. If you have a question or comment for any of our guests, call it in at 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the globe, around Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or TuneIn Radio. Chat room is open for business, too, your business. So get into the room. It's SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk speaker, TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions. Other people can be live with you. James Rowley from Brain Games on the Road, which premieres tonight. He joins us live from L.A. after these news notes. Want to know more about Netflix forsaking its interactive TV ambitions? The service has introduced Cat Burglar, a new tune series from Black Mirror creator Charlie Brooker and the production team behind the Emmy Award-winning interactive special Bandersnatch. You might call it Roadrunner meets a night at the museum, where trivia questions posed to the viewer and the responses dictate the action. What's more, there's more interactive content coming as 2022 rolls on, according to Netflix Vice President Andy Weil. Will we wait long again for the next effort? No, as a company spokesperson. A&E will go forward with a 4-episode James Brown docuseries next year. Day at Loud will explore the iconic soul singer's music and cultural impact through interviews and archival performance video. Mick Jagger and Questlove will be among the executive producers. Now quickies, Gaming Wall Street, a documentary special narrated by Kieran Culkin, plays on HBO Max next Thursday. True story inspired original movie Romeo and Juliet Killers is now running on Tubi, that's Fox's multi-channel bundle. Popular web comic Grubbs is being adapted for a TV series run. Jade Armour head writer MJ Offer will produce the venture with Grubbs creator Max Weaver. Variety reports a prequel to Starz hit series Outlander is coming together. Outlander's 6th season takes off on Starz a week from Sunday. And coverage of the 2022 Winter Paralympics begins next Friday on Peacock. More than 230 hours of events from Beijing will run on Peacock, NBC, and USA Network. And that is news notes for today. And now joining us live from Los Angeles in a same-day internet radio exclusive, the executive producer of Brain Games on the Road, reappearing tonight on Nat Geographic, James Rowley. James, congratulations. Happy to have you with us. And James should be popping up any second. Hold on for one moment. James, are you there? All right, we're having a little bit of a technical glitch. We apologize. James, call back in, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. And as soon as I see you're back on the line, we will get you back into the program. Brain Games, by the way, premieres tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on National Geographic Channel, available on cable and satellite. It is the newest version of a long-running series. It's also an award-winning series. We've covered it before on this program. It's a marvelous series, and you're invited to play along. It's a team format this time, and all the episodes are on the road. Okay, James Rowley is back with us, again calling us from Los Angeles. James, welcome in. And all right, we're going to try one more time. James, call back one more time. Somehow we're having a bit of a glitch. So call back in, 646-652-2906. Third time, we believe, will be the charmer. I want to let you know that this is the third of three episodes we are doing this week. If you missed the first two, which were on Tuesday and Wednesday this week, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. Or go to any of our podcast locations, including the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. We have had a great run so far the last 2 weeks with more than 900 replays. So thank you so much for all of that. All right. Third time, I believe, is going to be a charmer with James Rowley, the executive producer of Brain Games on the Road. So, James, welcome in. All right, we're going to stand by for James to come in. He should be coming in any minuto now. And we apologize for the technical glitch. In the meantime, I want to let you know, by the way, next week on Tomorrow Be Televised, we are awaiting a Monday guest. We'll tell you about that, we hope, over the weekend. We can tell you that next Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we will have an entrepreneur who's launching a brand-new network next month. It's called Yada TV. She's based here in New York. Her name is Tara Merchant. She is the chief executive officer. It's a very ambitious new network, which will carry all sorts of programming, and it's based here in New York. They have a studio in Queens, and they have a community outreach as well. So Tara Merchant from Yada TV, she'll join us as one of our guests this next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. For some reason, we are having an issue getting James on the air. So, James, I'm going to unmute again. I'm going to drop the line. Try one more time. Give us a call, 646-652-2906. We apologize to you. We apologize to our listeners for the technical issue that we're having getting James on, and we will get him on. That I promise you. So I'm declaring that breakdown, and we'll get that breakthrough to have James on. So James, call back in, 646-652-2906, and as soon as I see you're ready to go, we will get you on. And coming up, by the way, later in the program, at the bottom of the hour, we will have Jake Van Wagener. He is the executive producer and showrunner of the BYU television series Studio C, which in mid-March will begin its 15th season on the air. And then coming up at the top of the next hour, we will have the executive producers of the IMDb TV series Drama World. One will join us live from Canada, Toronto, and the other will be our first guest live from Seoul, South Korea. All right, let's see if James finally gets on. Yes, he does. James,
hi,
welcome there. In.
Hi, how are you?
Very, very fine,
can you
thank
hear
you.
Me?
First of all, what brought Brain Games back?
We had done at Magical Elves, we had done the big studio version of the show with Keegan-Michael Key, and then Magical Elves created this spinoff, essentially, taking the show on the road. It's really about bringing the fun games of Brain Games directly to the people. So we literally did that. We put the set on a flatbed truck and drove it all over the place and had people from the neighborhoods come and play in a series of fun Brain Games.
Mm-hmm. Sarah Post just joined us in our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Thanks for coming aboard, Sarah. If you have a question or comment for James, give us a call or use that chat room at Simon Apple 04 by name. You'll find it at the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, and we appreciate you being aboard. Tell us about how different this version is, being on the road, as opposed to the earlier versions that were on Nat Geo.
Sure. There's a couple of big differences. One is that everything's outside, which is really interesting and fun. And we're doing it as a team competition. Previously, the show had been much more about sort of presenting fun games, usually one-on-one or in, you know, sort of much more presentational. And this is team versus team. It's two teams of four go head-to-head, and they play five different games in different combinations. There's a game where it's just head-to-head. There's a game where each team plays individually. And then finally, the two teams go head-to-head in the final. And it's super fun, lighthearted, but it's all backed by science. So it's kind of a fun hybrid of a traditional game and the Brain Games brand that everybody knows and loves.
What kind of contestant search did you do to find the teams?
We did a pretty broad search. We looked for people to come to us as teams. We didn't put teams together. We have a lot of families competing, which adds a whole nother dynamic, which is really fun. But also we have groups of friends. The episode that premieres tonight at 8 o'clock on Nat Geo is actually a barbershop quartet going up against a gospel choir. And they all know each other, and they all work together in different forms. And I think one of them was the choir director for the other team and all stuff like that. But now they have to sort of go head-to-head in this fun battle. And it's not, you know, a gritty, mean competition. It's all in good fun, but it is a spirited competition.
Mm-hmm. You have two episodes, I believe, going on. So it's an hour-long show. Two different battles. Got this, the Battle of the Gospel Singers and the Barbershop Quartet. But I believe you also have another one, which has a group called Premios in the Pines up against the Awesome Saucers.
Yes, and I think we actually are doing two more after that. I believe what they're doing is airing four shows back-to-back for the next five Fridays. Mm-hmm. So you really get a chance to do a little mini binge each Friday night.
Did you try to match the teams up, by the way, so that they were in the same genre? For example, in that first episode, it's going to be gospel singers versus barbershop singers. Did you try for that same kind of that matchup in the other episodes?
Yes. Yeah, we have the second episode you mentioned, which is Awesome Saucers versus Primos from the Pines, is both families going up against each other. One is a family of four, and the other is two mothers and daughters, and the daughters are best friends. And then, you know, we tried to match age groups where we could, not always, but sometimes it's also just about, like, if they know each other. We have a team later on that's nurses that go up against, I think they go up against electricians or something, but, you know, it's a work family versus a work family. So we tried to kind of do matchmaking in that way.
James Rowley is the executive producer of the new version of Brain Games, this time on the road, and premieres tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time on Nat Geographic, available on cable and satellite all over the place. And if you have a question or comment for James, who joins us live from Los Angeles, make a call here on Tomorrow Be Televised. It's very simple, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04. My name's Sarah Post, already in the room. And don't forget, we have two episodes coming your way next week. And on our episode Friday, we will have Tara Merchant. She's the chief executive officer of one of the newer smart TV distributed services. It's called Yada TV Network, based here in Nueva York, brand new studios in Queens, and the community outreach along, and very ambitious programming plans. We'll hear all about it from Tara Merchant 1 week from today, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here, exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. James, how do you define a brain game?
That's a great question. I think it's firstly, literally, is something that happens in your brain. It's not a game of skill, necessarily. It's not a game of memory, necessarily, though both those things obviously happen in your brain. But the ideal brain game is something that shows you something weird that happens in your brain or something fantastic. I'll give you an example, and it's actually in this premiere episode tonight. We do a game called Upside Down Frowns, and there's this scientific phenomenon, I guess it would be, called the Thatcher Effect, and it was originally done on a portrait of Margaret Thatcher, the British Prime Minister, but what they did was they altered her eyes and her mouth in the image, and they literally went into like a Photoshop type thing and turned the eyes upside down, turned the mouth upside down, and if you take that very disturbing, weird-looking image of a face and turn the whole thing upside down and look at it, it will look completely normal. And so what we had was with these giant pinwheels on stage with presidents' faces on them. Some had been altered, some hadn't, but they were all upside down. And then we asked the contestants, literally, is it weird or not? And you look at this picture and you swear it's a completely normal picture of Richard Nixon. And then our host, Chuck Nice, rotates the image and turns it upside down, and right before your eyes, it goes weird. And it's this amazing thing your brain does where something's happening in your brain that's saying, that's a face, I know it's supposed to look like that, and it kind of just corrects it for you in your brain. So one of the things I was really pushing for on the show was that these our props, our art for the show be tactile, that it be physically on stage and shot with the camera as opposed to being a graphic. And that way you get to see this picture physically turn in front of you, and there's no camera trick to it. The trick's happening in your brain, and it's really cool. So that to me is sort of the quintessential brain game, because it's a very simple game. And you're trying to kind of overcome the trickery that your brain is doing to yourself. Your brain often is lying to you, which is a crazy thought, but it's true. And your brain kind of fills in gaps where they aren't there. Your brain sometimes makes stuff up that isn't there. And so we kind of exploit that for the purpose of fun and games.
We have a question, James, in our chat room. We'll get to it in a moment. But first, how long does it take to come up with a brain game? And once you decide you're going to go for it, how long does it take to develop it, flesh it out, and maybe even test it before it goes on the air?
Yeah, sure. It's very, very varied. What we would do is we would sort of do a lot of research into the science of the brain and find these weird phenomena like the Thatcher effect, and then try and gamify that. And so in the instance of that, we came up with this upside down thing. But another way to do it is you come up with a fun game and then see if there is some scientific reason that you're going a certain way. And so it was a combination of both, but it would take, we probably prepped for about 3 months before shooting 20 episodes of just on game. And exactly as you said, we come up with a bunch, then you test it, then you tweak it, then you test it again. You don't want to end up that the first time you're playing a game is with real contestants. We need to kind of flesh it out. And even if it's just a matter of, are we going to do 5 presidents' faces or 7? Are we going to do alternating where they each get a turn? You know, and just sort of the raw mechanics of the game, that needs to be worked out for every one of them. And there's 5 games in the episode. We were coming up with 100 games.
Sarah Post of our chat room has this question for you, James. Why do you think this version of Brain Games on the Road is going to resonate with audiences?
That's a great question. I think the main reason is because it's twofold. One is that it's us literally taking the game to the people. It's a very different experience than the big studio version we did with Keegan-Michael Key, where, you know, it's Jack Black is the one who's playing the brain games, or Dax Shepard and Kristen Bell. This is, you know, the people that live next door to you are playing the games, and they're playing against other people. So I think that's one, is sort of the personal hometown feel of bringing it to the people. And then the other is a hallmark of the show, and we've tried throughout the productions to keep some of the legacy elements that made the original Brain Game so popular. And one of them is a thing that we call a direct-to-viewer, and that is when we talk directly to the viewing audience and say, take a look at this picture. You know, can you see this, or can you find the thing that's missing, or whatever it is, and then explain why that's happening to their brains. And we do 2 or 3 of those in every episode. And so that's a really fun sort of legacy thing that I think the viewers will really connect to. We do one that's fascinating. We put up this image of 20 or so ovals over a striped background. It's a very simple image. And the ovals are oscillating. They're moving up and down, kind of waving, or so you think. Then we move the background out, and they're completely static. And because it's a striped background, your brain assumes there's motion, and it starts to look in your brain like it's actually moving, and it isn't. And that's done. You're not watching someone watch that. You, the viewer, are actually the person participating in that directly. And I think that's something that's really going to resonate with the viewer.
Well, Sarah Post, thank you for that question. And if any of you out there have questions also for our guest, James Rowley from Brain Games on the Road, which premieres tonight, 8 o'clock Eastern at Pacific Time on National Geographic Channel, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or like Sarah Post did, get in the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. One of the things that has made Brain Games long-running has been the hosts, right from the get-go. What do you look for in a host, and what makes Chuck Nice, who is a popular comedian, good for this type of show? Because you really need somebody who can communicate, but also able to have good knowledge of the subject matter, and also a great way with contestants. In this case, a great way with contestants.
Exactly. Well, and that is the answer. I think it's about them. You want a person who is going to connect with the players, especially in a game like this. And it's what Keegan Michael Key did really well in the studio version, and it's what Chuck Nice does incredibly well is listen. And I think that's the main thing you want any game show host to do is listen and know what's going on in the game. Because if you know that, you can comment on it and you can help people and you can, you know, draw a story out of people and so on. But the other thing Chuck has that is so important for this show is curiosity. He is a science lover. We brought Chuck into the game testing process, so he was able to really understand what was happening, but also we changed some games based on his suggestions because he would actually say, well, isn't it happening more in this part of your brain? And because he knows so much about science, he's a voracious science reader and, you know, an incredibly nice guy who works really hard. And I think that's the thing. He had an impeccable work ethic and really connected with these contestants in a way that was palpable on screen.
Mm-hmm. Instead, I want to remind you that Brain Games is produced by Magical Elves. That's the award-winning production company behind such shows as Top Chef and Nailed It, the popular Netflix series. And if you are a big fan of Nailed It, stay tuned to our next half hour because we're offering as our classic trivia prize the new Nailed It cookbook. So stay tuned. That's in our next half hour near top of the hour. So get your wonderful trivia knowledge up there, your trivia brain game to going, because you could be our next winner. We're going for our second weekly winner in a row and third in 4 weeks. So that's coming your way, again, near the top of the hour. Talk more about some of the games that people can play at home. For example, one episode has a musical scale game. And then later on tonight, there's a game dealing with high-frequency words. Explain how you put those kind of unique puzzlers for the home audience together.
Sure. And I think one of the really important things for us in putting this show together is that all the games have play along for the viewer as well. You know, you don't have, you're not just watching other people play the game. You can play along with them. And so there's a really interesting one coming up in the first episode, actually, that is about songs and music, how different keys affect the music. And what we did was we had very popular, you know, nursery rhyme type songs, just very simple, easy to know songs, but had them all transposed to a minor key. And most nursery rhymes are in a happy up key. And a minor key is, you know, sad and morose, and it sort of gives you a completely different feeling. And we play these minor key versions of songs and try and get the people to figure out what they are. And it's amazing how your brain can still figure it out. And so that's one that I think is really fun, and everybody at home can play along because you can try and listen and figure out what you think it is. And then there's another one that's really interesting coming up called, I think we called it A Day in the Life. And it's a very simple game where you have the 7 days of the week on movable boards, and they're jumbled. And so the first part of the game is to put them in alphabetical order, you know, by the word. And then we have – they're printed on different colors, and then you have to sort them in color order. And the whole point of that game is that when we're used to seeing things a certain way, whether it be Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, it is very hard to get our brain to look past that order and go, okay, well, no, alphabetically, Wednesday would come after Thursday. But not how I'm used to. And it's really hard for your brain to go, okay, so I'll put Wednesday after Thursday. And I think that one was really interesting too. And there's just you know, like I said, 100 games, so there's a lot of them. And within each episode, there are 5 regular games and then at least 2 of those direct-to-viewer play-at-home games. So there's a lot of gaming to be done with your brain.
Are you finding a lot of schools and educators are using some of the brain games material in classrooms? And if so, what kind of feedback do you get from them?
I haven't gotten any feedback directly, but I know when we were putting the show together, we kept that in mind, that I know the original show is very popular in schools. And what I love about this format is they are very shareable chunks of the show. You can, you know, sort of clip out a game and you'll get, we explain every game after it happens as far as what's happened in your brain, why this is significant, why it is that, you know, why does a minor key sound sad? So you can kind of get a fun game and an explanation all in a couple of minutes. And like I said, I think like 8 to 9 times per episode. So I think that's part of it. And also I think we make science fun. I think that's an important thing about the show, is this is not a sort of erudite discussion about neurons and so on. It's a fun game where you learn a little something along the way, but it's always fun.
Yeah. By the way, we have another chat room question from PuppyLover34. Welcome in. And do you consult scientists to come up with the stunts, to come up with the brain games?
Absolutely, yes. We had a neuroscientist from Johns Hopkins was our main sort of science consultant, and we not only had them on at the beginning when we were developing the games, but also throughout post-production, we would have him consult on how we were presenting things. Are we saying this right? You know, even if we said something like, when you forget your car keys, your brain doesn't, you know, X, Y, Z. And he would correct us and say, well, that's actually not what happens when you forget. And so that's a big part of it, is making sure that it's accurate. And then there's also, when you're doing something with National Geographic, there is a huge amount of care that goes into how we say things to make sure it's accurate, that it's not misrepresented. And, you know, as a game show producer, I'm used to putting rules and putting descriptions in a way that's sort of short, succinct, and, you know, you get the gist of what we're doing and then you move on. And we have to be very, very, very careful with how we parsed our language and how we presented things so that we're not saying something is done by a neuron when it's actually done by a synapse or something. And, you know, I'm not a neuroscientist, so that's what we did, was we got in touch with neuroscientists. And also, all our illusions, the thing I was talking about with the ovals and a lot of that stuff, is based on scientific illusions that have been published. So we would often contact those scientists, get permission to use the original, or get them to sort of weigh in on how we were presenting this science.
PuppyLover34, thank you so much for the chat room question. And for everybody, remember, Brain Games on the Road premieres tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, 4 episodes over a 2-hour span. And National Geographic Channel is available in your area on cable and satellite, so check it out for where it is. For more details about the program and the service online, go to www.nationalgeographic.com. It's www.nationalgeographic.com. Brain Games on the Road on tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on National Geographic. James Rowley, executive producer, thank you again for joining us. A pleasure to have you on. Good luck with this new set of episodes. Hopefully another long run coming for this series, which has had a great run already on Nat Geo over the years. And all the very best to you and everybody at Magical Elves for more great television down the road.
Thank you so much, Simon. It was a pleasure.
Same here. Have a sensational weekend.
You too.
James Rowley from Brain Games on the Road joining us live from Los Angeles. More Tomorrow We Televise coming your way in our next half hour. We go live to Provo, Utah, and we'll check in with Studio C, the BYU sketch variety show about to hit season 15. We'll have executive producer and showrunner Jake Van Wagoner joining us as we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. Listen to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, tune.com, together reaching nearly 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Check out Nivdino Radio. It's a very unusual radio experience, and it comes your way next Thursday, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. Nivdino Radio right here on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best VTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome to our second 30 minutes of this 90-minute edition of Tomorrow Be Televised, wrapping up your February week of 2022. Simon Abbon with you live from New York. Welcome to just joining us at the bottom of the hour. Happy to have you with us. 35 degrees at the bottom of the hour. More great guests coming away in the hour ahead. If you have a question or comment, ring the phone, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up, we're going to speak with Jake Van Wagoner. He's the executive producer and showrunner of the very popular BYU TV series Studio C, about to hit season 15. He will join us live from Provo, Utah. Plus, our classic trivia question of the week, the Nailed In Cookbook. That's our prize this week. And in our up segment, we will return to an A&E television series that we focused on late January that is no longer on the air. We'll tell you why. All that coming up, but first some words from the fine folks at our sponsor, Audible.com. If you're a fan of cold cases, and I mean really cold cases, a la mystery thrillers, how about this one from James Patterson, the very popular author? It's available to you right now with a trial run to Audible.com. It's called The Coldest Case. And again, that's yours if you take a one-month trial with Audible.com. If you haven't heard, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. Over 250,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, and our podcast affiliates. Just sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. You get one free audio book, that one-month trial, great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com, and while supply lasts, important health and wellness information. If you're an Amazon Prime customer, you get two audiobooks for your trial of one, including one from the growing catalog of Audible Originals. We're talking original audio productions and podcast series, best of Broadway, off-Broadway, and regional theater, great one-woman and one-man shows, and much, much more. So why not try Audible.com now and find out how, with a one-month trial, Audible.com can transform the way you or someone you know can hear the world. And remember, it makes a great gift for you or someone you love any time of the year. For all the details, it's audibletrial.com/televised. As you might know, we are now in the midst of our 15th year on the air, and we're not the only situation in the world of television or covering the world of television that is about to hit or is in year 15. Coming up next month, a very popular show on BYU TV, that is the national cable and satellite and now smart TV network owned by Brigham Young University. Well, they have a TV series that's been around for nearly 15 years, or I should say 15 seasons, and it goes into season 15 next month. It's called Studio C. And joining us live from Provo, Utah, is the executive producer and showrunner of the program, Wagoner. Jake, welcome in.
Hey, thanks, Simon. I'm happy to be here.
Same here. Jake, what keeps Studio C going?
Well, I think it's something different. I mean, there are other sketch comedy shows on TV, but this show is a show that parents can watch with their kids, and it's super funny every week. And it's sometimes you're worried about things that you're watching, and Studio C kind of has that track record of just like you can turn it on and not be worried or feel uncomfortable with whoever you're watching it with. And so it's just a super fun, family-friendly show, but also extremely funny.
Mm-hmm. A number of people in TV have tried to duplicate the success of Saturday Night Live in some fashion, whether on a late night level or a primetime level. It was a station in Seattle, Washington that did a show with Ross Schaefer, became later a game show host, that ran for several seasons in late night. This channel has had the opportunity to do this now for 14 years, 14 seasons, going into season 15 in mid-March. How do you put a show like this together and keep it fresh and family friendly and enjoyable for any viewer, no matter how they tune in?
Yeah, that's the mission of BYU TV. And so that I think is really the driving force to it. And the original cast that was on the show, they were all friends and had this sketch troupe together, and they really launched the show into being what it is. They were the they were the driving force to being like, hey, we want to make it super clean and funny, and people really latched on to that. And so when BYU TV saw the success of that, they've been so supportive and eager to keep it going because they've seen like, oh, there's a need for this out there. And yeah, like you said, there are a lot of shows that come and go, a lot of sketch shows especially that come and go, but I think it's because of the element that Studio C has, that it is so clean, but also like we've got really brilliant writers and performers, and it really is a high level of comedy, and BYU TV is obviously very supportive of it, and that certainly helps when you have a network that's behind you saying yes, more, and I think that's probably the key to its success is just the cleanness, the uniqueness of just how the humor can be for all ages. It's kind of like a Pixar movie where parents can watch it and get something totally different than kids. Like there's lots of different things infused in these sketches that everybody enjoys.
Yeah. Is anything fair game, whether it's pop culture, whether it's things that are in the zeitgeist or politics or sports? How do you turn the subject matter?
Because the show is comes out, like we shoot it and then it comes out months later. We don't ever really do like political or pop culture. Pop culture, yes, but anything that's like, you know, Saturday Night Live has got that, it's live and this happened 3 days ago and now we're doing a joke about it. We don't have that luxury because we shoot and then we do post and then we put it out months later. So our writers and our cast members are really good at just evergreen material. Anything that can stay fresh forever, that's what we're looking for. And we can also, like, future cast and say, like, okay, this movie's coming out in 6 months. Let's do a parody trailer for that. But mostly it's just like, yeah, it's evergreen. We can joke about it. People will find it funny in 30 years or they find it funny 20 years ago. And that's kind of what we aim for.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to putting a particular episode together, how soon does the writing team come together to put the show together? What are they? What's sort of the process of taking an episode?
Yeah, well, we're lucky to have a lot of our performers are also writers on the show, and then we also have just full-time writers. And so we usually do a pre-production of about 3 months, like 12 weeks, I guess. And we'll write, and we write all of the scripts in that time, and we obviously throw a ton of them out. We're able to just pick the best material, but it usually takes about 3 months of work to get all of our material to shoot for a season's worth of sketches and episodes.
Mm-hmm. Do you do this? I remember Hee Haw, when they were on the air, they would have, let's say, two big taping sessions of episodes, one in the spring, one in the fall, to get a season together, and then they would mix and match the country music performers. You know, here's which episode has mm-hmm. this Roy Clark song, this Buck Owens song, or this Cornfield sketch, or Archie Taft doing his Where Are You Tonight song parody. Does it work the
yeah.
same way, or do you have it more spread out in the course of the year?
No, that's basically the same. We do three tapings in front of a live studio audience, but what we do is, we actually know what the episodes are going to be before we even shoot them. We pair the sketches together and we shoot the episodes, although they are blocked together like that, we shoot the sketches as close together as we can when we know they're going to be in the same episode. Because what we're starting to do is kind of weave the episodes together with a through line, kind of like Mr. Show does. I don't know if you know Mr. Show, but really like taking one character from this sketch and they walk into the next sketch and start the next scene. And so we've really, like, by putting them, block shooting it is obviously economically good, but the way we're able to place the episode or the sketches together, it's really like a perfect way to watch the show. So instead of just watching sketches online, you can also go to the platform that BYU TV has at BYUTV.org, and you can watch the full episode, and it's like, oh, this is super fun. I see all these through lines.
Mm-hmm. Do you, like Saturday Night Live, try to have a guest host? Or have, let's say, one of the performers, or have the performers rotate as a host?
Yeah, we don't ever really do a host, although this season, season 15, our season premiere, we have Will Forte from SNL and MacGruber and Last Man on Earth. We have him being the guest host for the premiere, which is on March 14th. And we've done that one other time in the past, and that was with Kenan Thompson from Saturday Night Live. But it's something that we're going to do more and more as we keep going. But usually we just kind of start the show and there's no real host to it, but this episode with Will Forte will be different and special because it is a little bit more like, yeah, he's the special guest for the show.
Mm-hmm. And as you heard, season 15 of Studio C, which is BYU TV's longest running program, it premieres on March 14th, 9 p.m. Eastern. And that is also 7 p.m. Mountain Time, where BYU TV is located, 8 p.m. Central, and, of course, 6 p.m. Pacific on BYU TV, which is available nationally on cable, satellite, and also, growingly, on smart TV sets and smart TV devices, too. We've got the executive producer and showrunner of Studio C, Jake Van Wagner, joining us today on Tomorrow Be Televised. This half hour, he joins us from Provo, Utah, and we want to hear from you. So give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Number good anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio, or use that chat room. We've had a lot of chat room stuff going on today. We like that. Keep it coming. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised, SimonApple04, the specific chat room. Coming up later this half hour, we've got our classic trivia question of the week. We have an up segment on an A&E series that we talked about late last month. It's no longer on the air. We'll tell you why. And then our next half hour, we'll showcase Drama World. It's a very unusual drama that mixes adventure and rom-com, and it's an interesting co-production between the United States and South Korea. We will go live to the executive producers of the show who are joining us, one from Toronto, Canada, and the other will be our first guest ever from South Korea. That's coming up after the top of the next hour. Do you also try to mix musical performances as well, the way Saturday Night Live does?
We try to be distinct from what SNL is doing because, you know, because we are a slightly different show, but we do love music, and so we started to infusing some musical elements into the show. It's different, though. We don't have a live band, per se. Like, we don't have bands come on and play, but we have started doing musical sketches more and more. And then also, the season finale of season 15 is actually a full musical. Like I said before, we're trying to weave in a storyline, like a fun little thread that if you watch the sketches individually, they're super fun and entertaining. But if you watch the whole show, it's like, oh, cool. This is all glued together. And we wrote a full musical that kind of takes us on the journey of the episode. So we go into a sketch with music, and then we do the sketch, no music, and then we come out of it with music. And it's really fun and creative.
Mm-hmm. Were there variety shows early on in TV's existence that inspire Studio C, whether it is the famous Sid Caesar, Imogene Coppier shows in the 50s, or some of the variety shows or sketch comedy shows in the 1960s, whether it was Gary Moore or Andy Williams or Carol Burnett, shows that stressed sketch comedy along with the variety?
Totally. It's hard for me to speak to, like, the origins of it because I do know a lot of the old cast members. I think for them they were a part of a sketch group together. And so really, I don't know what their inspirations were, but for me and for a lot of the cast members, I know that, like, shows like Portlandia and SNL and Mad TV, shows like that have really been what we, you know, that's kind of our era and what we watched when we were growing up. And so those are kind of the inspirations, I think, for us. And like I mentioned earlier, Mr. Show, there's a couple other sketch shows, obviously Key and Peele, that is, like, you know, those amazing sketch shows that everyone loves. Those are the kinds of shows, although we love, like, the Carol Burnett show. All those are great, but for us, in our generation, yeah, those ones are the ones that kind of inspired us and try to keep us, like, you know, on par with that comedy-wise.
Mm-hmm. Puppy Lover 34 is back with us. He was with us. That chat room person was with us in the first half hour. So welcome back. If you have a question or comment for Jake, give us a call or use that chat room, SimonApple04. We're happy to have you back in the room. Thanks for tuning us in so far today. We know it's worth a while, and we're happy you're aboard. Jake, some shows like Studio C like to do different sketches, different characters every show. Some like continuing characters where, let's say, every show or every other episode, a particular actor, particular comic or performer will play this character. In terms of when you've been executive producing and show running it, what do you think? Do you like the idea of continuing characters, or do you like it that every show has different sketches, different characters?
I think it's a mix of both of those, Simon. I think that when you have a character that hits really well, you just have to you have to do more sketches with that character. It's super important, though, I think, to keep it fresh and to keep finding those characters. But when there is one that's like, yes, this is a fan favorite, then it's silly to not, like, you know, craft another sketch around that or do a spinoff for them on TikTok or YouTube that's just outside the show. But, yeah, I think that they come organically, and it's not necessarily like, oh, this character, let's write this character thing. It's going to blow up. It's more gauging the audience response to it. And I really do love those character sketches, and it feels like, at least for our audience, that's what people really love is character sketches, and they can just really be like, oh, I love to see this character in this other situation. So I think as long as we don't saturate it too much, that's what I feel like works really well for the audience.
Yeah. Talk about the writer-performers on Studio C. How do you play to their strengths?
Well, I mean, we've been super lucky to find the performers that we have. Like I mentioned earlier, the original cast, they all were a group of friends. They started in a sketch troupe together. They were all writers and producers on the show, or writers and performers on the show and producers. And then when they left, there was kind of like this let's figure this out again. And the show was very lucky to find extremely talented people who could do both. And so finding the performers that can also write has been super important because they just know their own voices. They're able to write sketches that are perfect for their voice. And but that's not to say that the writers who are not performers can't do that. I've found a lot of success in pairing up a writer and a performer to say, hey, what about this character? Take this and run with it. And that's not necessarily unique to Studio C, but I think we're extremely lucky to have found people that can do both, and then also the writers who just get the performers, and they have an idea for a character, and then the actor and the writer pair up and say, like, oh, gosh, what if we took it this way? And they really are able to play to each other's strengths, and the writer can pitch things, and the actor can say, ooh, what if it's like this? So that relationship has been awesome, and I feel like that's what kind of elevates the comedies when you have these people writing for each other as well as a writer-performer writing this character that's like, look, I'm going to nail it, and there's no one else that could perform this sketch the same way as the person that wrote it and performed it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Do you find that when people leave the show, they want to come back? You know, do you get from time to time alumni, let's say, from previous seasons coming back for a sketch or two?
Totally. Yeah, we've had a couple people from the old cast come back and do guest appearances, but also Jason Gray, who was in the original cast, one of the original founding members, he's back on the cast now. So he took a break for about 2 years, and then it just worked out with his schedule and ours to have him back on the cast, and he is amazing. And we're already in talks with former cast members because, like we talked about earlier with those recurring characters, like there are a lot of fun characters that original cast did. And so now we're trying to be like, okay, well, what if we bring this person back in for this sketch or this person in for an episode? And the fans obviously love that. A lot of our fans are, you know, they grew up with this Studio C cast and now they're getting to graduate into this newer cast. And it's a fun crossover for them to see, like, ooh, I love this old person, this old cast member with this new cast member. That's a very fun mashup.
Mm-hmm. Do you sometimes get inquiries from people who have been in other comedy troupes like the Groundlings or Second City or some of the or Improv Comedy Theater here in New York that would like to be part, at least for a time, on your series?
For sure. Yeah, we have at the end of every season, we go out and we look for people, and we have a lot of people from those organizations that are excited about the show. I think people have seen sketches online, not necessarily know exactly what the show is, and once we tell them, they're like, oh, that, yes, I love that. I would love to be a part of that. So that's how we've gotten some cast members in the past, and then in this upcoming season, we have some new cast members that will be on the show, and that's exactly how we got them. It's from those organizations that, you know, where they do improv and they do sketch comedy, and they fit right into the show. I think one of the unique things about the show and about BYU TV is that we have this standard of what we want to present, and, you know, BYU TV really wants it to be clean and uplifting comedy, and so finding those people is really interesting and fun to, like, what personality will jive well with the show. And it's really cool to see, like, all the comedians out there that are like, no, no, I love clean comedy. That's my thing. Let's do it. And yeah, so to answer your question, yes, all of these places are where we go to look when we're finding new people.
How much room is there for improv or for the characters cracking each other up? You know, I remember, you know, many a Carol Burnett show where one of the highlights was Harvey Korman and Tim Conway in various sketches, and you, like, wondered, somewhere along the line in that sketch, one of them is going to try to break the other up, and it turned out to be hilarious.
Yes, for sure. We love that, too. As far as improv goes, we don't have a lot of we don't improvise a lot when we are doing, like, our studio audience sketches, because that is really locked in, and we're live to tape, and so we can't really explore. We kind of try to do that in the rehearsal phase. But what I love is that energy, like you mentioned, with Harvey Korman trying to make the other cast members break. That's we don't want that to happen all the time, but when that energy is there, it's just fun for the audience to see. And when a cast member does break, it makes us break, and it makes us laugh harder, because we can tell that, like, yes, they're just playing and having fun, and that energy, I think, is super important. Like I said, we don't want to do it all the time, but we had this last season, it'll come out in season 15, but we have one of our cast members, Naomi, who goes off on a rant in one of the sketches, but she just kept going and going and going, and it really did, like, everyone broke. And it was super fun. I love that stuff.
I believe, Jake, we have a call. We're going to take it. Hello, you're on Tomorrow We Televise. What's your name and where are you calling from? Go right ahead. You're on the air. All right. We will hold up. And if you want to call back, do so, and we will get you on the air. I understand before you did this series, you were involved with the very popular True TV series Impractical Jokers. What was it like doing that series? And did you bring any of that experience over to doing Studio City?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that series really that series taught me a lot about television, about comedy as well. Like, the Impractical Jokers, they're the best. They're the coolest dudes in the world, and they were very awesome to, like, really, that was my first big job in TV, and I was in the writer's room for a couple seasons, and then I was a producer on the show in post, that really did kind of shape, like, okay, this is how you craft a joke. This is how you pitch. This is how you interact with the talent. And this is really, it taught me a lot about being a showrunner. And then when I went into post, it was, you know, we had an amazing executive producer of post, Kevin Felix over there, who he was a genius. And that taught me also a lot about that process and what to look for in the edit and how to cut things down. And I would say that show probably single-handedly taught me more than any other show I've worked on. And again, the crew that's on that show is amazing. They've a lot of them have been on the show since the very beginning, but also the Jokers are just super cool dudes. And they are so, like, they want to be your friend and they want to get the best out of you. And it's just for me, it was a really great environment.
Mm-hmm. So what are we going to look forward to in this season 15, and where do you go with your TV career from here?
Well, I'm very excited about the Will Forte episode. It is a very, very good half hour of TV. Super funny. Some of the funniest stuff I feel like we've done on the show. And season 15 in general is just really fun. We tried to make it, like I said, a little bit more of like a through line. When you're watching it all together, it's just a really fun watch, sitting down and just seeing everything connected. So that's what I love about this season. And the sketches themselves are so fun, and they'll be posted just like they normally are. But watching the full episode it's amazing. It's going to be a really fun season of TV. And for me, we're already in development for season 16 of Studio C, and we'll just keep going on that. We're like, the show is getting better and better every season, and the network is so excited and behind it, and we're trying new things, and we're coming at it from different angles. So I'm really excited for the future of Studio C.
The big 15th season of Studio C, the longest-running program original for BYU TV, it premieres on March 14th, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Mountain, and 6 p.m. Pacific Time. BYU TV carried on cable and satellite. Check Lone Star where it plays. It's also playing in many areas on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. For more details about the program and the service, go to www.byutv.org. That's www.byutv.org. Studio C hits Season 15 on March 14th. Jake Van Wagner, thank you again for joining us. Congratulations to you and everybody involved for getting Season 15 on the air, and for everybody, all the alumni, for what they've done coming to this point. Have a great 15th season and a 16th, and hopefully many more to come.
Awesome. Thanks, Simon. Appreciate it.
You're very, very welcome, Jake. Take care. All the greatest.
Okay, bye.
Jake Van Wagner, executive producer and showrunner of Studio C, joining us live from Provo, Utah. Incidentally, we had told you early in the week that we were trying to have on today's program people involved with a new BYU TV series that is premiering on Sunday night called Ruby and the Well. The people at BYU TV are so excited about this series, they've already greenlighted a second season. Well, as it turned out, the second season just started production this week. That figured in. So I want to thank Jake and the Studio C people for joining us on very late notice. And we are going to try to get the folks behind Ruby and the Well on our show either on our next episode Monday afternoon or next Friday's episode, and we will certainly keep you posted. Once again, for all details about both shows, www.byutv.org. Now time for our classic trivia question of the week. This is our third time offering the question, and if you first get the correct answer, you will win the brand-new Nailed It cookbook based on the popular Netflix series. In fact, our question is about Netflix. We're going for our second weekly winner in a row and our third in 4 weeks. Here's the question. Name Netflix's first unscripted series back in 2015. Name Netflix's first unscripted series back in 2015. Give you a hint, two-word answer. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. If you're first with the correct answer, you win. And if we don't get a winner by the end of today, we will post the question tomorrow morning, Saturday, on Facebook and Twitter. Book at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to play in. Once again, here's the question. Name Netflix's first unscripted series back in 2015. It's a two-word title. And if you're first with the correct answer, you will win the Nailed In cookbook, or Nailed It cookbook, I should say. So get in the game today, and all the very best. Now time for an update where we catch up on guests and topics we've had recently on this program. On our January 31st edition, Big 2-Hour One, we had Danny Passman, the executive producer of the new, at that time, A&E series, Adults Adopting Adults. We told you that was a program dealing with a very sensitive and for some people very controversial topic, the whole idea of adult adoption. Well, A&E decided this week to cancel the show after three episodes. According to spokespeople there, it was low ratings. However, according to an item published a couple of days ago in the popular entertainment website, The Wrap, there may be more to this than meets the eye. In that third episode, the last one that aired earlier this month, one of the people that was a subject was Danny Huff with his wife. And during the episode, Danny, who was in the episode trying to adopt a 20-year-old woman, acknowledged that there was a previous effort by him to adopt an 18-year-old girl. And it soured because of romantic impulses on his part. His wife, Christy, charged during the episode unfaithful behavior on her husband. And there was a lot of social media reaction to it. There was also reaction to a TikTok video that apparently Danny Huff posted, which may have contained some racial epithets. Well, in the press release for the series, which I read before we booked Danny Passman on, A&E did infer that there would be a situation of this nature on one of the episodes. By the way, Huff denied earlier this week all the allegations of inappropriate behavior that was carried on social media and in the Wrap story. So once again, A&E has decided to can Adults Adopting Adults after three episodes, and it may be the Danny Huff situation and social media reaction to it that may have, again, you can read all about it in The Wrap, which is available at The Wrap. .com. That's WREP.com. You're listening to Marvy Televised. We are the program all about the two. We're with you Mondays and Fridays, usually at this hour, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific. We will be back in that regular schedule this coming Monday and Friday. And coming up this Friday, we will have Tara Merchant. She is the chief executive officer of one of the brand new networks staying on smart TV sets and smart devices. It's based here in New York called Yada TV. They have a very ambitious programming situation. They have studio space in Queens. And they have an interesting community outreach that they will showcase. That's all coming up next week, 1 week from today, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tamavi Televised. When we come back, we're going to go live both to Toronto, Canada, and South Korea to showcase one of the new attractions that premiered earlier this month on IMDb TV. It's called Drama World. We will have, live from Toronto, Canada, executive producer and co-creator Chris Martin, and as well as director, and from South Korea, co-star and executive producer Sean DeLake. And they are, by the way, partners in the production company that put this together. We will have them both for you after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. Once again, you're listening to www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com, together reaching nearly 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Coming away tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, it's Man Talk. Check it out. That's Man Talk tomorrow, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Don't forget, best VTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our final 30 minutes of Tamavi Televised on this last Friday of February 2022. And welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour. Tom and I'm with you live from New York, 39 degrees at the top of the hour. Happy to have you aboard from New York. And if you have a question or comment for our final guest of the day, give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, Tune Radio. Or, if you like, get into our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And don't forget, you can connect others into the conversation by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk, Speaker, Tune, and screen. Follow the instructions. Other people can be live with you. In recent months, IMDb.TV, that's Amazon's ad-supported television service available on smart TV sets and smart devices, has had a habit of taking shows that have had a previous life elsewhere and bringing them on the service and making them hits. For example, Leverage, very popular long-running show on TNT, became Leverage Redemption. Judge Judy, for 25 years in syndication, now as Judy Justice. And Almost Paradise, a series that originally premiered on WGN America, now News Nation, well, that's been running on IMDb TV, and now that is going into a second season with executive producer Dean Devlin. Well, earlier this month, IMDb TV did it again, this time with a series that originally premiered in the United States on Netflix, now has 2 seasons worth of shows, and is now running on this service. It's called Drama World. It is a co-production involving the United States and South Korea through a production company known as Third Culture Content. Joining us live to talk about the series and the production company, first, from Toronto, Canada, executive producer and director Chris Martin. Chris, welcome in.
Hi, Simon. Thanks.
And joining us live, and he's our first guest, I believe, from South Korea in the 4.5 years we've been doing this program, the co-star of Drama World, as well as executive producer, Sean DeLake. Sean, it's great to have you here.
Thank you for having us. Pleasure to meet you.
And Sean, where in South Korea are you joining us from?
I'm in Seoul.
Sean, we'll start with you. Why are people so intrigued by Korean drama? Why has it become a worldwide phenomenon and worthy of being used as a background for a television series?
Wow, that's a really loaded question right off the bat. I think it's a multi-layered answer, and it's kept evolving over time, especially in recent years. I think it's pretty incredible, first of all, what Korea has accomplished in music, film, and television, as seen by like Squid Game and Parasite and BTS, and just there's just so much amazing creativity coming out of this country. And I think there's a real appreciation for just art and creativity in South Korea. And I think it's just there's a lot of competition as well in this country. And so people work really, really hard. And I mean, Chris and I experienced it on our film set, having done 2 seasons fully shot in South Korea, and just the amount of passion that goes into the work. And I think it's that mixed with recently the big OTT platforms like Netflix having come into Korea and kind of expanding on kind of the traditional, just in a television standpoint, like the traditional Korean drama, and now just enabling a lot of creators to go beyond just like the traditional love stories and really like bend genres and explore different spaces. And like, now you see, you know, zombie historical dramas and things like Squid Game and all that. And so I think it's just kind of a combination of everything. And I just think that like creatives in Korea are just awesome. Like they stick to their guns and they're not ashamed of doing what's true to them. And now everyone's just really having a moment on the global stage. And it's really amazing to see.
Mm-hmm. Chris, how did Drama World come together for you and Sean?
Another long answer maybe, but I'll try to jump in there. So, you know, for me, I fell in love with Korean cinema in the early 2000s, actually, and you know, went to Korea to try to work with the filmmakers that I fell in love with. You know, the Park Chan-wook, Bong Joon-ho, all these amazing directors. And it was kind of through that process that Sean and I met, and we both had very similar experiences to trying to, you know, make things in Korea. You know, both of us are originally from the States, and trying to get stuff going over there. It was never quite here or there. And so Drama World was this opportunity that we could put a show together that really catered to all the things that we had as positives. We wanted to bring the U.S. And Korea together in a way, and this story just kind of was a great way to do that, and to bring countries together, stories together, and kind of show that we're not that different after all, and just kind of like have all these actors speaking two languages and acting together, and it just kind of really was a fun thing for us to do, and it's been great to kind of see audiences react in really positive ways and like to see this mashup of cultures.
Mm-hmm. Sean, explain the concept, because it's a woman in the United States who is a fan of this genre of television. She's played by Liv Houston, who was in the Showtime series Yellow Jackets, which is also coming back for a second season, hopefully later this year on Showtime. And she then finds herself in sort of this Korean drama warp, if you will.
Yeah, it's the concept is, I mean, you just explained it very perfectly. It follows a Korean drama fan from the U.S. named Claire Duncan, who is just obsessed with Korean drama, and then she gets magically transported through her smartphone into her favorite Korean drama, which expands beyond just one drama. It's this place called Drama World, where all Korean dramas exist at the same time, and so she's kind of bouncing around the world trying to figure out how to keep this drama she got sucked into on track, and she's basically told not to get involved in the story, but of course there ends up being a love story that develops between her and the leading man of the drama, which is the character I play named June Park, and so their love is ultimately what ends up saving the world in season one, and then in the second season we really go deeper and explore like what happens after true love is achieved. And so it's a fantasy romantic comedy that's really something that you know, anyone from all ages and from anywhere can really enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Drama World, both seasons now playing on IMDb.tv or IMDb TV. That is Amazon's ad supported programming service, available on smart TV sets and smart devices all over the place. And we've got the executive producers of both the series and the production company that made it, called Third Culture Content. That's Chris Martin. He joins us live from Toronto, Canada. And wonderful Sean DuLake, who is a co-star also of the series. He joins us live from Seoul, South Korea. And they're both with us this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Sam, I'm with you live from New York, 39 degrees at the moment here in the Big Apple. And we invite you to be part of the conversation. All you got to do is pick up the phone and call 646-652-2906 or use that chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Chris, what is the experience like not only to co-create and write a series like this where you have a cast of both of the U.S. and South Korean actors, but also to direct the show in a bilingual fashion?
I would say confusing for a lot of people, right? And so it's funny because when I first went to Korea, I went to school to actually learn Korean over there as well. But on set, you know, I would be speaking with the Korean cast in Korean, the cast from the States in English, But then, you know, when you're directing, there's just a lot going on. And so sometimes I'd end up speaking to, like, Liv in Korean and the Korean cast in English, which, you know, it was always fun. And you know, people were okay with that. But there are a lot of complications, but it's kind of what makes it fun and kind of the really special thing about it is that we get to have these lines in English, have this dialogue going back and forth between English and Korean. I think it adds a lot of complexity. But I think that's what makes the show really rich and exciting and something that people haven't really seen yet. Because there's not a lot of opportunities to have these actors act in, because in other worlds it wouldn't make sense. But in drama world, it makes complete sense to have these characters speak to each other in different languages because we have a little gimmick where people, when they're talking to each other, there's subtitles there so that we know they can understand each other. So it's almost like a babble fish. Where people can kind of get what's going on. And I think that just, yeah, it's one of the really fun things about the world. And to get to work with such amazing talent from both Hollywood and Seoul is just, what a pleasure.
Mm-hmm. You know, Sean, we're seeing more and more television series in the United States that are being done in multiple languages in the episode, where you will hear English and Spanish. You will hear English and Arabic or English and French and so on and so forth. What do you think about that? That we may be becoming more of a community, or at least in this country and nation, that's willing to have multiple languages present in the same episode?
I think it's amazing, and I think it's just opened up things really for storytellers and creatives. I mean, when Chris and I founded Third Culture Content, that's what we sought out to try to do, was to tell stories that were borderless and cross-cultural, and to now see on the biggest stage with like the Netflixes of the world, they're putting out these shows that organically blend cultures. It's very validating, and it feels very empowering that now, I think it's also a testament to how audiences' palates have evolved, where it doesn't matter what language now stories are told in, it's just more about authenticity. If you just, it's really about like, okay, you can tell a story about in a certain country or about a certain culture, but it's about audiences now can really tell if it's real or not. And I think that challenges storytellers. And I really think we're in a new phase of content where it's like this ocean of opportunity where there's so many untold stories because now people don't care about reading subtitles. And that's very, very exciting just from our perspective.
The thing with you, Sean, now that the series has been on IMDb TV for several weeks, what kind of feedback are you getting?
It's been really great. Like the, you know, Amazon, because it's also on the Amazon Prime Video platform as a part of, you know, it's just in that Amazon umbrella. And so having, we're kind of, Drama World has kind of now gone to this space where it's become this gateway series, an introductory series, if you will, where for even though there are these big Korean dramas like Squid Game and everything that's hitting, you know, global audiences, there's a lot of people that still have never seen a Korean film or Korean drama. And so our show has kind of become that gateway series where people watch our show and then they just fall in love with the entire genre. And that's been really cool because we didn't originally set out to have Drama World be that, but it's kind of become that with this new life it's now found on the Amazon platform. So originally it was just supposed to celebrate the genre, but now it's become this kind of this gateway series for the whole genre. And so it's been really cool to see. We're bringing a lot of new fans into the fold. So it's been really fun.
Yeah. Chris, what is the Korean drama creators in South Korea think about this? Apparently, they must think pretty highly because in the second season, there are a lot of cameos from not only the K-drama acting community, including the lead actor of Squid Game, who's been up for several U.S. awards, Lee Jung-jae, but also people in the K-pop world.
Yeah, I think that, you know, with Drama World, it's a very fun thing for a lot of these people to do and be a part of because it's very rare that you get to kind of mix, again, Hollywood and Korea. You get to have Daniel Dae Kim and Ha Ji-won, you know, in one show together. and it just be natural. And so I think, you know, with the sort of like fantastical world, with the playful nature of everything, people really enjoy it, and they have a lot of fun participating. And I think that, you know, we create a really cool world and atmosphere, you know, not just in the show, but also on set, because we have creatives from around the world behind the camera and also in front. And I think that that's, you know, what people really like to do, is because it's different, it's exciting. And, you know, it's amazing for me as a director to get to work with Lee Jong-jae and Han Hyo-joo and all these amazing Korean actors that come on and do cameos for us, as well as I mentioned, Liv Houston, you know, Sean Dulake, who's on right now, Daniel Dae Kim, Brett Gray, Henry Lau. It's such a cool thing to get all these people all in one place. And I think everybody kind of sees that and sees that we're trying to do something different. And you know, I think artists always respond to that.
Chris Martin and Sean Dulake are our guests this half hour on Tamabi Televised. They are the co-founders of Third Culture Content. We're going to get into that shortly and what other projects, TV-wise, they may be up to down the road. But currently, they're represented with the second season, actually both seasons, of Drama World. That's their program that originally was on Netflix in the United States. Now it's on IMDb TV. That's Amazon's ad-supported programming service, available on smart TV sets and smart devices. Chris Martin joins us live from Toronto, Canada. Sean Dulake from South Korea. He is our first South Korean guest in the history of this program, 14 and a half years and counting. Hey, for question or comment, our remaining minutes with both folks, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And before we leave you today, we have a takeaway of the week about a topic that we covered earlier this week that may have more impact than just in the world of telehealth. We're talking about MayaMD and the whole idea of a personal video assistant you can control on your television set. That's our takeaway of the week. More about that coming up shortly. Sean, talk about Third Culture Content. What is it designed to do? And given the interest by people, for example, adapting Korean dramas like Parasite into U.S. dramas, is there anything thought about, you know, having Third Culture be an avenue for some of the Korean dramas to become U.S. adapted?
Adaptations has been definitely something we've talked about. I think Chris and I have found a space, having done two seasons of Drama World, where we built a network of artists and producers and writers in Korea, but obviously because Chris and I are U.S. citizens and grew up in the States, have a lot of ties to, you know, the same type of community in Hollywood and in the U.S. And so obviously leveraging that, but also playing to our sensibilities to – as I was saying before, you know, I think we just set out to make kind of borderless, cross-cultural content that are just compelling stories that that blend different cultures together and are like just authentic stories that for this new audience that really desires that. Mainly, we're talking with and we're developing new projects with the OTT platforms like the Netflixes and Amazons and Disney Pluses. And so there's a lot of talent out of Korea that's wanting to be a part of these more kind of global projects. And we're definitely sitting at the forefront of that, which has been really, really fun recently.
Mm-hmm. Chris, any projects you can talk about? And what about a third season of Drama World?
Well, you know, as far as the third season goes, we would love to hear if fans want that. Not to spoil anything, but we end on a pretty big cliffhanger at the end of season two. So there's definitely more story to tell. If people want that, if people want to see that. So hopefully people will let us know. So definitely more Drama World in the pipeline. And as far as other projects, Sean, do you want to jump in on that actually?
Sure. Yeah, we're putting together a film right now that's with a really big K-pop artist. I can't say the name yet, but pretty big one. And it's going to be like a musical film scripted narrative that we're actually working together with the producer of Parasite, the studio CJ E&M. They're going to be co-producing, and that's really, really exciting as well. It's essentially like a story about kind of mental health, which is a topic that's not really discussed about too much, but there unfortunately are like news that comes out every once in a while about that, which I could talk about more if you'd want to hear about that. But we're also doing a series that's like unscripted, very family oriented, with another K-pop star that is just an insanely musically talented person, and so that one we're ramping up as well this year. And then there's another series in development that is focused on international school in Asia that's being done with Netflix. And so that's already keeping us pretty busy, but we have a bunch more in the pipeline too, and other shows that we're now taking out the pitch and expanding our team. So putting the word out there too, we're also looking for new stuff. If there's any creators that are listening right now that are like, man, these guys seem to vibe with me creatively, like, contact us, and we're always down to talk and meet new people.
Mm-hmm. The international school project, is that a scripted or unscripted?
That one's scripted. It's still in the development stage, but some really, really awesome writers involved, and it's scripted anyway.
Mm-hmm. For both of you, one last question. How do you see third culture getting involved with the growing number of Asian American Pacific Islander creators here in the United States doing shows in the U.S. Or shows in other Asian, like Japan and so forth? We're now seeing more and more people of Asian descent getting production deals to do first look show program development with the likes of Netflix, of Amazon, of Hulu, of Disney Plus, Apple TV Plus, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the things that we, you know, when we created the company, we set out to do is we wanted to create a platform that we can help empower all these creators who, you know, a lot of them we can call friends. You know, I think that Justin Chan is a great example of that. Daniel A. Kim, who are, you know, we're already working with both of those guys. We want to continue those relationships and meet more people and hopefully create opportunities together, because I think there's a lot of stories that haven't been told, and that's what we've been putting this effort in, is like, you know, really establishing a foundation that we can continue to build off of and work with people who we really respect and really like their vision, and we, you know, we can provide that sort of that help to get those things made, I think.
Mm-hmm. And to add to that, I think we don't actually go into all these, you know, new projects of like, okay, we gotta secure a first look deal with Amazon or all production companies, obviously they aim to do that, but I think we're just more about like what comes organically story wise and like Chris was saying with Daniel and Justin Chan just directed half of Pachinko, which is this new series on TV Plus that's coming out, and that one's gonna be huge, and it's really like in that space that you just mentioned, Simon. And so we're just trying to see what happens organically, but definitely want third culture to be in the middle of all of this exciting new content, this wave of things that are coming out of Asia, and also what's happening in the U.S. these days.
The name of the series is Drama World, and two seasons worth are now available to you on IMDb TV. That's Amazon's ad-supported service, available on smart TV sets and smart TVs all over, including Amazon Fire TV and the brand-new line of Amazon TV sets, available at consumer electronics stores all over the place. For more details about the program and the service online, go to imdb.com. It's imdb.com or amazon.com. It's imdb.com or amazon.com. Drama World, two seasons worth, now running on IMDb TV. Chris Martin, Sean DuLake, thank you both very, very much for joining us. Congratulations on how Third Culture content is going so far. Let's see if we get a season 3 and maybe more in the months and years to come. And we look forward to catching your exploits, so hopefully down the road. It's been a delight having both of you on.
Thanks so much, Simon.
Yeah, thanks so much, Simon. I really appreciate it. Man, your energy level is through the roof. I love it.
Thank you very, very much, Chris and Sean. It's been a pleasure. Take care. All the greatest.
All right, you too.
Chris Martin joining us live from Toronto, Canada, and Sean DuLake joining us live from Seoul, South Korea. Now time for our regular feature for Fridays, the takeaway of the week. It's the development that we cover that we think you should take away from as something could impact the way you watch and use television. And this week, the takeaway choice was very simple. It all came together on our special episode this past Tuesday with Christian Haberman and Dr. Venimus Changat. They're the co-founders of Maya MD, the folks who, through LG Smart TV sets, are now opening an incredible new door in the world of telehealth on television. The idea of you having access anytime you like with an artificial intelligence-created humanoid on your television set, giving you vital health information. And what's very important, it goes beyond telehealth. It's this whole idea of video-created assistants that pop up in your TV set, whether it's like a video butler or a video concierge or a booking agent for travel, giving you entertainment options, delivering food and other services to you, or even having you manage your living quarters, whether home or apartment, in a better way. And MyMD is not the only people working on this. As we told you on Tuesday, Samsung announced at CES 2022 that it's got a project called Home Hub, which they didn't say much about, but they called it a video assistant. And we hope we'll hear more about it as the year goes on. So the bottom line for this takeaway is this. In this interactive TV era, which is growing and going as we speak, this whole idea of personal video assistants, whether general or specialized, whether created by computer or created by artificial intelligence, they may very well be a part of the way you watch and use television. And we will continue to follow this story as we go. Two more things to say before we wrap up for the day. First of all, coming up on March 9th, wonderful media fest from our good friend Tony B, Tony Bolton, former Bloomberg executive. I had the opportunity to tape a session with him as part of this festival. The festival takes place virtually March 9th before South by Southwest, 1 p.m. Eastern time. And that will be happening. So if you want more details about that event, and hear yours truly and other people too, it's TonyBMediaGroup.com. It's TonyBMediaGroup.com. And finally, in case you are off the planet, last night, the season 21 of Law & Order, first Law & Order season of that mothership in 12 years, premiered on NBC, and I might add to good reviews. As a fan of this series, one of the very best, I think, and most influential in TV history, it's great to see the show back after 12 years. In my opinion, and the opinion of many, it never should have gone off the air after season 20. But it's great to see season 21 finally happen with a great cast led by Anthony Anderson coming off Blacklist in his Law & Order role before taking on that series. Wonderful talent like Hugh Dancy, Jeffrey Donovan of Burn Notice fame, and, of course, the brilliant Sam Waterston back again on the series. He's the longest-running actor in that series history. So Dick Wolf and crew, congratulations. You're back in New York where you belong. And ding, ding, welcome in. I think we're going to have another long run with Law & Order. And, of course, it leads off a whole night of Law & Order on Thursdays, followed by Law & Order Special Victims Unit, now in Season 23, and now in Season 2, Law & Order Organized Crime. And of course, for all details, NBC.com. Thanks to all of our guests for making things happen, all of you for tuning in. We're back on Monday at a regular time, and next Friday, we've got the founder and chief executive officer of Yana TV, based here in New York, Karen Merchant. Came in late on today's program. Want to catch up with Smith? Go to the homepage, blogtheradio.com, that's televised. Check out our podcast all weekend long, available on Amazon Music, the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Apple Podcasts, and other destinations. The views expressed here are those of the participants, not only those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Andy Toews, BTR's general manager, Jay Sonnenberg, head of content. Website service provided by On Podium, the internet's new podcast outpost. For details, go to onpodium.com. Guitarist Fakus is our web coordinator. Tomorrow we televised sports day by Audible.com, the audio marketplace of Amazon.com. Remember, Audible transforms the way you or others you know hear the world. For a free book or two, it's audibletrial.com/televised. For tomorrow we televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic last February 2022 weekend. We'll be back on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific. You know where, Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tune Radio, and all of our podcast affiliates. Whatever you're doing between now and then, make it safe and great. And if you haven't been vaccinated, check in with your doctor, go over your medical situation, find out about all the antiviral pills and treatments available to you, then make a great choice. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.